everyone. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Mo.
And this is Team Get Over It.
We're an all-female team participating in the greatest motoring adventure on the planet, the Mongo Rally.
We'll be driving 10,000 miles across mountains, deserts, and unknown terrain.
And along the way, we hope to spread our feminist and environmental ideals.
Join us here as we share our stories, thoughts, and interviews as we get ready for the Mongo Rally 2023.
Third time's the charm, I hope.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. For this month's episode, we will be interviewing Shannon Kane, who recently conducted a sex-positive feminist online dating experiment via Tinder as a response to the striking down of Roe versus Wade. We thought the idea was extremely interesting and important, considering today's, how can I say this, like, feminist climate? Anyway, it's very challenging for feminists at the moment. And of course, if you are a feminist yourself, you would want to find a feminist partner. So without further ado, please welcome Shannon, who will hopefully shed some light on this. And would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Hi, yes, I'm Shannon Kane. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to this conversation. I'm a writer living in Paris, and I've just spent, I'm an independent author and an editor and writer, and have spent some time exploring the dating scene here in Paris. I've been here for about 8 years.
Wow, that's really nice. And I think I heard that you spent like some time in Paris and then you moved to the south of France. And then are you back in Paris now?
Yes, actually, that's right. I've been in France total for 8 years. I was in Paris for a while. And then I spent 3 years down in the south in a small village just north of Nice. And then during the pandemic, I came back to Paris.
Oh, interesting.
Just as it was winding down, I showed back up here. I would had enough of isolation in a very small village. I was ready to come back.
Yeah, I understand. Totally understandable. Okay, so then can you explain what inspired you to conduct this experiment?
Well, you know, post-pandemic, I think my attitude was changing a little bit around dating. And I was looking for a different kind of connection. Beforehand, as I had just arrived in Paris, it was a time of fun and learning and getting the culture down, getting the language down, meeting people. And then I met somebody and we were together for a little over a year. And then the pandemic, we split up. Then the pandemic struck. And by the time it was all, it's not over yet, by the time people are coming out of it, I was, like a lot of folks, just feeling really isolated, really sad, really, it was hard to be single during that period. I wasn't, I was glad that I had split up with my ex because frankly, we would probably have like bunkered up together, hunkered down or whatever together and kind of rode through the whole, experience and it would have been a disaster. So, I was glad to not be in that relationship anymore, but it was really hard to be alone during all of that. And so now that, coming out of it, it feels like, I'm looking for a different kind of connection. And so going into this, what I'm calling my feminist kink experiment, where I'm requiring feminism as a bottom line, it feels like I'm saving myself a lot of time and energy, saving myself a lot of grief, a lot of heartache, a lot of, just shaving my legs and getting excited and, going down to meet someone who turns out to be a blowhard or a closet sexist or whatever. Mm. And I have found it's been an enormous saving of time. I haven't had any greater success in terms of meeting people, but it's been a really interesting experiment and I feel better about the whole dating experience doing it this way.
Yeah, I'd imagine, like, we talked briefly before starting recording this episode, and yeah, I would imagine that, like, just kind of coming out with that off the bat, like, I need someone who's a feminist would definitely, like, save a lot of time, wasted time on dates that are just ultimately disappointing and lead nowhere. So, yeah, I think that's very, it's efficient. It's very smart. It's a smart way to approach dating.
Well,
I like it.
My screening question. And the screening question changed with this experiment. Before, it was, what do you feel about feminism? How do you feel about feminism? Mm-hmm. And that invited all kinds of, you know, evasive horseshit responses, frankly, that mm-hmm. just kind of, I really couldn't get to the kernel of it. I mean, they, you know, you, it's easy to talk about equality and say the right thing. But when you ask a man to say the words, "I am a feminist," that's a whole other story. And that clarified things a lot for me, because they will do the dance. They'll go all around saying all kinds of things around, you know, how they respect women, how they grew up with women, how they have daughters, how they believe that, you know, salary parity is important, how they, all their friends are women. I mean, they'll go on and on, but I will still press them and say, okay, they'll give me those responses and I'll say, okay, great. Are you a feminist? And they'll respond some more. What do you mean by feminist? And I'll say, well, what my personal definition of a feminist is, a person who says, "I am a feminist," like, period. It's not that
simple. Yeah.
It's pretty simple. And whatever the definition is to you is your business. And that's up to us to figure out later on whether that aligns, you know, with one another. But for now, I just need to know that you're not afraid of the word, you know, and that you are, you're kind of down with a movement, you know.
Yeah.
Before I even want to sit down and have a drink with you.
Yeah, for sure. Like it is really interesting. And I feel like I've noticed that too. Just whenever people are avoiding committing to something, like either it's just saying like a yes or a no, and like you said, dancing around it, like that also says a lot. Like their silence is speaking volumes, I guess, as we could say, right?
Yeah, 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 exactly.
And then it just makes me totally suspicious of them.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I have a rich collection of responses from guys who are avoiding the F word. Mm-hmm. I keep screenshots. It's entertaining, and it's good, material for my memoir.
Would you like to share some of those, I guess, right now? Might as well.
Sure. I have them. I have a collection of, I don't know. There's a section in the book called The Unmatched.
And
it's just made up of screenshot dialogues. You know, here's a guy named, I'll just call them by their first initial, a guy named G. I say, "What do you think of feminism?" This was early on before I had shifted the question. Mm-hmm. And his response is a long series of texts. "Everything depends on the definition you give it," he says. "It's for mm-hmm. equality between humans, whether man or a woman." Yes. "But today's feminism that criticizes all the words and the wrongs of our time, no way. I have the great respect for women. I'd like to still admire them for who they are, for that which differentiates them by their femininity, but I'd still like to open the doors for them." This is 2022. And we're still getting, "I'd still like to be able to open doors for women." I mean, this was last week.
That's pretty wild.
Here's a guy named E. "I grew up around women, raised by a single mother. I have three daughters. I never recognized any of these differences. As for current feminist thinking, I'm much more reserved. It often forgets that there cannot be a feminine identity without a masculine one, and vice versa, and that the correlations and complements of the two cannot be defined and constructed without the other." This is like old school baloney. This is 1970s arguments against second wave feminism.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And often they're coming up against, I get these questions against what they're calling neo-feminism. This guy, P, he says, I said, "What do you think of feminism?" He says, "If it's intelligent feminism, I'm all for it."
I don't.
Right? As if there's a stupid kind of feminism.
Right, yeah. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, some of them are, I asked one guy named Jay, "Are you the feminist man I'm looking for?" And he goes, "Up to you to discover that," wink emoji. "Your profile really speaks to me, pretty legs." You know, so there's that kind of, response where you really, you know, they're saying it because they want, they know what they know what I want to hear. Or they think,
oh, exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. This is just kind of reminded me. I mean, like, this is not really related to feminism, but I remember I went on a Tinder date with a guy, and he, I don't mind going out with people who are shorter than me, it does not bother me at all. I know some people are kind of stuck up about it, but whatever, if you've got like a, you know, nice personality and we get along really well, the height does not matter. And then this guy lied on his profile about his height. And I met him and I was just like, wow, this guy's really cute. Like, you know, we were having a lot of fun, but then like, in Korea, I live in Korea. And then so the Korean move for men to kind of get back to your apartment is they'll say, oh, it's so late and my house is really far away. Instead of just asking, do you want to have sex? Like, instead of just coming out with it, they'll kind of like make up this weird story about not being able to go home. So he did that. And then I was like, ugh, I don't like this guy anymore. Just ask directly. Just say like, do you want to have sex? And I'll probably say yes. Like, but anyway, and then I became a little bit annoyed with him. And then I asked him about his height. And I was like, there's no way that you're as tall as you said you were. You're at least like 2 inches shorter than that. And I said, why did you lie about your height on your profile? And he's like, oh, because girls won't date me. And I'm like, yeah, but then you go on the date with the girl and she's going to know you're a liar.
Like, yes. Yes.
And it's just like,
yes. I know it's impossible. As a tall woman too. I mean, this is a thing, you know, I put tall on my profile and I used to, at least now the feminist thing, I don't put anything at all, but my former profile was just four words. It was writer, American, tall, and feminist. That was it. It was like four things.
Very simple.
And so the tall thing got really like, how tall, I get how tall are you a lot. And yes, I'm with you. I don't mind a short man at all.
Yeah.
But it's the short syndrome.
Exactly. Right? That's the problem. It's like, it's all these, and it's all the lies from the outset. And it's just like, and I've had some male friends and I've called them out on it and stuff, but they're saying things like, you know, if I want to get a girlfriend, if I want to get a date, I have to kind of trick them into dating me. And I'm like, you don't, you really don't. It's just making a bad relationship. You're setting the foundations for lying and cheating and like all that. Anyway,
it just makes a shitty first impression.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't get any better as they get older, I'm sorry to say. I mean, I think they maybe they don't stop lying about their height, but they never stop being weird about it. You know, I mean, I've had guys at the end of the date who were like, actually kind of tried to maneuver and position themselves in such a way that like, I was standing at a lower level than they were at the time when it came to have the kiss, and just like, oh man, the confidence is so sexy. And
right.
If you're not going to be confident about your height, you know, not that interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And then second question, what methods did you use, if any, to qualify or quantify the results of the experiment?
The experiment was super unscientific. I mean, I just started it one night. It was a Valentine's Day and I was home on Tinder, which is a depressing place to be on Valentine's Day. And, I thought, you know, what the hell, just to entertain myself, I'm going to start counting swipes just to see, you know, how many left swipes it takes to get to a right swipe. It just kind of continued from there, you know. But it was hash marks in my notebook. It was wildly unscientific.
But I think like the fact that you, because I know you sent me some graphs and stuff, like the data that you can buy. Like, I mean, I don't think it's wildly unscientific at all. You know, you got some data and then you arranged it in a certain way and like you're kind of like talking about it. So I think probably this is like a very sort of unique thing to do, because I know a lot of people complain about online dating, but like now you actually do have proof.
I can share what the proof is. I did make some attractive little graphs. I made some funnel charts. This is what I was doing on the weekend of Valentine's Day, making funnel charts about my swipes on Tinder and Bumble. So I did 905 swipes and I stopped there randomly, maybe because I just got distracted and, you know, decided that was enough. But for 905 left swipes, I got 49 right swipes. So these are 49 people that I was interested in looking at and talking to. Of those 49, 24 matched with me. Mm-hmm. So that was like about a 50% match ratio. And then of those 24, 13 we ended up messaging, or they messaged me. And often, here's my also my rule, which is very, mm-hmm. seems kind of retro, but I usually do wait for them to message me, because part of my interest is I need to feel that they are interested. I just am not,
yeah.
no longer to the point where I'm going to, chasing men is not, I know it feels, one outreach is not, one hello doesn't feel like a chase, but I feel like at this point in my life, I want them to be reaching out, whatever. It's yeah. just my particular kink. Let's call it that.
No, that's fair. And I heard like from a lot of guys, like they just kind of swipe right on everybody. Like they don't even actually check the profiles.
Yeah. Like exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it makes sense to wait for them to message first, just to see like if they are genuinely interested or they just, you know, swiped on everybody.
Yeah. That have changed over the years. In the beginning, you know, I've been online for about, 10 years on the dating site, starting on OkCupid back when it was, you know, different. And I was much different then. Now I'm, I used to give it, you know, say, look at their profile and make some comment about something they'd said and put all this effort into it. And then I realized that was fruitless. So anyway, of those 13 that mm-hmm. I did end up messaging, then I asked the question, are you a feminist? And of the 13, four of them passed the sniff test, in my view. So of those four, one thing or another happened and there were nobody, we actually never got to set a date. We never got past the point of saying, yes, you're a feminist and yes, I want to date you. So I got zero dates at all. And this is on my vanilla profile. This is okay. Before I switched to the feminist kink profile.
Okay.
So I did it again then under the feminist kink mm-hmm. profile. And I guess I should read it to you, huh?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
The profile says, here is the new feminist kink profile. It reads, I have a kink for feminist men. Make me wet with your respect and kindness. Let me wrap my lips around your positive masculinity. Watch me orgasm in public on our first date from the joy of having been asked my opinion. Muscle your way through the crowd of mainstream dude bros. Your enlightened confidence and egalitarian charm will bring me to my knees.
Nice.
You know, after the Supreme Court shenanigans of June 2022, a lot of, I don't know if you noticed this too, but a lot of women on their dating profiles were changing their, were putting vasectomy only. Mm-hmm. Or on their profiles. And I just kind of went for a more Lysistrata approach, more a reverse Lysistrata, I should say, rather than withholding sex, saying, yeah, I'm not withholding. I'm choosing the ones who are with us. I'm choosing the allies. It's more of a carrot than a stick approach.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like that. I thought that was my, I'm Canadian, but I have a lot of American friends. And then of course, like, I mean, American politics does have a lot of influence internationally too, so I'm a little bit worried about like how it's going to change like the constitution and laws in other countries. So my knee-jerk reaction like when I heard that news is like, okay, well I guess I'm not having sex ever again, like
mm-hmm, right. Really. And that is so it's so destructive.
Yeah, I mean, it is very
for us to say, I mean, whatever, for the guys, you know, they'll be screaming and yelling, but for it's punitive on all levels, just like patriarchy is, right?
Yeah, but I like your approach. It's good.
Yeah. And so after I changed it to the feminist kink profile, I was, you know, hoping that I'd have a better result. Mm-hmm. I'll get to the punchline and say not really. But in the mm-hmm. but in the meantime, there was like a different thing happened in the interim between the 905 swipes and what ended up being one date.
Mm-hmm. One
date. So whereas in the vanilla profile, I had swiped 49 times right to the 905. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. is the behavior that surprised me. I swiped right of half as many times under the feminist kink profile.
Okay.
I was just, I don't know. After I looked at the stats, I was like, wow, I didn't expect that somehow my behavior would change by having this, this outrageously, well, at least for Tinder, which is pretty mainstream, you know, kind of this mm-hmm. outrageous sex positive profile. But it did. Yeah. I guess I was more reserved.
Yeah, I'd say maybe by changing your profile, you also sort of focused your mind a little bit more, maybe, and then a little bit more discerning in the profiles could be.
Yeah, that could be too. I probably also had some safety in mind. You know, I was less not going to put myself out there with the ones that seemed a little bit iffy. And so then out of those 24 that I swiped right on, I matched with 14 of them and ended up messaging 11. So the numbers are getting down to pretty much the same, I mean, statistically. Two of those 11 turned out to be feminist.
Okay.
I set dates with both of them. And one of them stood me up, and the other one was just boring, boring, boring. So there, that's kind of where I landed on the, at least on the statistics.
I can't believe standing, I feel like that's such a teenager move. Like when I was in college or something, I would expect to be stood up as an adult. It just seems really petty.
Yeah. And that was kind of rare because I hadn't been stood up, and it was especially in Paris, or French men. I don't know. It happened to be more in the US, but, I was in this kind of crowded terrace restaurant, you know, typically French kind of romantic spot, lots of people there overlooking the canal. And I'm sitting there and there's this group of three young men, and they're like, "Madame, why is that chair empty?" And I'm like, because y'all are pigs. I just like went right at them. And they're like, "Oh la la," you know, and it just turned into a whole fun, you know, moment of dialogue with these guys who are way too young for me, but we're really, really flirty, you know, trying to defend the honor of their fellow Frenchmen. I'm like, "How much more time should I give him? Should I give him 3 minutes? No, give him 7 minutes." You know, it was pretty hilarious. But yeah, that ended up being a date that stood up. I know, a grown man.
Yeah, that's
not even a text,
right? Like, I mean, you know, if something comes up, or even if you change, if you change your mind the last minute, be like, "You know what, I actually don't want to go out," then like just say something.
You know, if they text and say they're going to be late, it's fine, I wait. But normally, I mean, other than that, they get 15 minutes flat. And it actually weirdly happened to me again just last week. I was stood up, and I kind of had a feeling it might happen because he hadn't checked in with me. And on that day, I was like getting out of the shower. I'm like, "Oh, I haven't heard from him." And so I texted, "You know, I'll see you in a minute." And when I was on the way, I still hadn't heard and realized, okay, this might not work. And so I sat there waiting for a bit, and 15 minutes, I texted back, is like, "I'm not here anymore." And I went to, you know, get some sushi takeout. By the time I got back home, I was like, you know, I was back in my jammies, taking off the bra. Like, I had my mouth full of sushi, and I checked into Tinder, and there's a message from him. And it says to me, and it says, "I love your profile." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "Dude," I responded to him. Like, I was practically lost the sushi, like spitting it out of my mouth. He not only stood me up, but then confused me with someone else. And the giveaway on that, I mean, it's a giveaway in any language, but particularly in French, he had reverted to the formal vous. Right. So he was addressing me again as a stranger. "I love your profile." I was like, I did. Normally I just like unmatch. I guess like those guys are not worth my time, but this one I couldn't resist. I was like, I said, "Seriously, you stood me up and now you're confusing me with someone else." And his reply was, it made zero sense at all. And he made no effort to explain himself. And he still hasn't. Days later, his reply was like, no, not at all. Period. That was it. Like, I'm supposed to just accept that.
Yeah. Is he denying standing you up, or is he saying?
No, I don't know. He's just like, he just put his little French head in the sand and was like, "Nope, maybe," like, la, 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 blocked his fingers in his ears. And I don't know, decided. And you know, that was that.
That's so
bizarre. There
was
another one that stood me up. He didn't quite stand me up, but he also, like, on Saturday, we set the date. On Wednesday afternoon, at 3 o'clock, I texted him saying, you know, "See you tonight." By 9 p.m., I still hadn't heard from him. And I'm just texting a friend saying, "You know what? I think I'm getting stood up. I think I'm getting ghosted." And at that moment, he pings me on WhatsApp, and he's like, "Oh, too bad I didn't hear from you until today. I was really looking forward to ravaging your body," or something, because we'd having this really sexy exchange beforehand. And he's, yeah, that's it. Oh, too bad I didn't hear from you today. Until today. Like, we had just set the date 3 days earlier. So this says to me, okay, this dude is married, A.
Oh.
And also looking to find someone he can manipulate. You know, he's like,
yeah.
My friend, I sent the exchange to my friend, and they replied back to me, "What in the kingdom of gaslight is this?" I was like,
oh, I like that.
Hello. Like, I can read it, you know, I checked in with you hours and hours before. So there's all that, you know, there's that kind of games that goes on. And that too, for me, every time that happens, it's a gift. It's like, saved me the time, saved me the energy of going down to the bar and sitting there and, you know, perhaps getting excited about a person who turns out to be unreliable.
Yeah, that reminds me of a time, I think it was last summer, I had matched with somebody on Tinder, but like we just matched and we were talking and then like immediately he was like, oh, do you have some time right now? And I was like, because he turns out he lives really close by. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. Actually, like, you know, I'm free. It was a Sunday afternoon. I'm free. Let's go grab a beer. Sure. So we just like kind of meet in the middle and we just like get a beer. And he asked me like, what are you looking for? And I was like, you know what? Actually, at this point, I'm not sure, but you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll like meet a couple times maybe. And then he left very abruptly, which was fine. But he's like, oh, you know, suddenly something came up. I got to go. And I was like, okay, bye. And then he texted me a few days after that. And he said, like, can you meet me right now? And I was like, I've got plans now. Like, you know, Sunday I was free, but I'm not free today. And then I said, but if you want to meet, like, you know, how about this day or this day? And I gave him some options. And then he made like a noise. I guess like TCH kind of like a and then nothing. So basically, like you were saying, like he was just trying to see how far he could manipulate me and like how quick like I would come at his beck and call kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, right. And like, you know, after that happened, I just kind of got angry and I was like, why?
I know. I don't know, it's that insecurity. It really is. I mean, one of the great things about online dating for me is that it reveals male insecurity in a way that's just crystal clear. Yeah. It's like, if you can't behave well online, then, you know, what kind of person are you? If you can't be nice to strangers, it's really kind of the golden rule, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it is.
So I don't know. There's a lot about dating online that I find really revealing. I think people reveal more about themselves than they intend to. And especially in their dating profiles, you know, the dudes who are like, it's really hard to describe yourself, or come find out for yourself when, you know, we'll talk. And, you know, that says to me, they are uncomfortable writing.
Mm-hmm.
They're uncomfortable probably communicating. And no, that's not what I'm looking for either. So there's so many ways that, it's just, I feel like online dating is a really efficient screening process. People can do so much in person that they can't do on the internet. I know vice versa as well, but that's why you have the first date.
Yeah, it's so important. And then speaking of dates, I guess, so what was the best date you went on and like what made it good? Why was it a good date?
Well, the best date, I guess I went on, ended in the one that ended in a relationship where I was involved for a year and a half. And, you know, that's the date where it just clicks, you know, it immediately, you know, and there's one of my dates, this French guy introduced me to this concept of the 3 second rule where apparently 3 seconds, you know, in 3 seconds on laying eyes on somebody, whether there's potential there or whether, you know, it could be the one. So I've had, you know, 3 second moments a few times in my life. And then I had it again. But actually this one, it took a little while longer because this was part of a process I was engaging in, having to do with kissing first on my dates. I'd gotten to a point in my dating life where I was really bored and I just decided on a different experiment. This is pre-pandemic when you could still go around kissing people.
Now it's all about the fist bumps.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not very romantic.
I know. Even the bisou is started to come back here in France. You know, the kissing on the two cheeks.
I never even thought about that. Okay, yeah, of course it would have to like, go away.
It was a very, very confusing time here in France, and it still is. I think the bisou, because this, you know, it's just as common as shaking a hand.
Right.
So people kind of were doing an awkward dance around one another. How do we greet? It was hard. Mm. Anyway, so I was certainly not going to. This is all pre-pandemic when I was doing my Kiss First experiment. And I had those Kiss First dates with a handful of guys. And the last one was with the guy I ended up being with for a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Those are fun dates. Yeah. But his kiss, well, I can describe it later because I've got something to maybe to share with you about those seven Kiss First dates. But after the kiss, what made the date work was that he just, well, frankly, you know, I was involved. I'm obsessed with a certain American writer at James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned James Baldwin to him. And actually, he was also one of my screening date questions. I would mention James Baldwin. And if my date knew who I was talking about and knew that he was someone that I could kind of click with culturally.
Right.
And so, yes, this guy not only knew who he was, he said, oh, child preacher, 14 brothers and sisters, I think. I was like, no, only 11. He goes, oh, okay. You know, I was like, wow. All right. So we connected on that level. And then also he was just incredibly sexy.
Yeah. Very important.
Yeah.
Oh. So how about the opposite? What about the flip side? What's the worst date? What made it bad?
There are just too many bad dates, I think, to even point to the worst. I had a bad one just last week that was sort of illustrative, I guess you could say, of bad dates.
Okay.
This one was just with a blowhard. Like your classic dude that just won't stop talking. And I find it ironic that the popular culture around women is that we talk so much when we know how much airspace men take up. So I was in this, he was like, he had a nice white beard and he was very well put together. His name was Henri. And he just made me want to stand up and walk away as he was talking. Oh. And I have this fantasy sometimes of what that would be like. What would I do the next time some dude, like some blowhard in a nice suit, who just starts the date, for example, admitting he's never been to the United States, and then he just starts informing me all about American politics, or he goes on some droning lecture about the quality of butter in Upper Normandy versus the quality of butter in Lower Normandy, and I have to sit there and listen to that for 15 minutes. And I mean, what if I just reached for my purse and walked and left the restaurant without even looking back?
That would
that
be amazing.
Night with this guy, I was looking at the door, wishing I were walking through it. So anyway, Henri kind of winds down his lecture about American economics. And then I said to him, you know, it seems to me as if you were just explaining my own country to me. And then he kind of raised his eyeball and he's like, okay. He kind of took that in without comment, but then pivoted towards explaining fundamentals of life in France as if I had just not finished telling him I've lived here for almost a decade. And it was really someone in this man's life had taught him how to dominate a conversation. By example. He was one of these kids that, you know, just grew up with somebody not letting him get a word in edgewise. So there was no way for me to respond, yeah, I understand, or yes, no, you don't need to explain, or just shut the fuck up for a minute. There was no way. Eventually I thought, okay, I'm going to model for him what an interesting conversation looks like in my world. And so I told him this silly anecdote about a client of mine, which he loved. And then he just kind of insisted that I write it as my next novel. He just took over the story and just gushed out his average intelligence and his very limited imagination and this huge ego. And he just dictated the plot of my next novel to me. And I'm shaking my head at him and frowning and furrowing my brow. And he just keeps plowing right through. And he's like, no, hang on, at the expression on my face, as though I have a problem with his idea and not with his personality. He just keeps interrupting me. And finally I was like, you know what, if you have an idea for a book, you should just learn how to write one yourself. And this was that moment in the date where the guy realizes that he's with a woman he starts to be afraid that the woman is smarter than he is.
Yeah.
opposed to the moment in the date that that also often happens, where the guy realizes that he is sitting across from an equal intellect, and yeah. that moment is really fun. You know, that's a very different thing. But this guy, no, Henri, he still was like he had his finger raised between us and kind of as if he were like expecting me to interrupt. And so naturally I did. I kept interrupting. He complained I wasn't letting him talk. And I was like, hey, do you think you dumped all those useless words onto a minute ago? And then finally, and here's the thing. Here's a phrase that has been tossed at me and you and all of us all of our mm-hmm. lives. What you don't understand is... You know, it's like, finally, you know, I'm 58 years old. I've had enough of this, what you don't understand is, and it just came out of me. And I said, listen, don't presume what I don't understand. You are not in my head.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, it's like, chill. It's just an expression. By the time I got home, I'd been unmatched. it was pretty clear that was going to happen. But it was a bad date, but also in a way it was a good date because I just let him have it. It wasn't one of those dates where most of the time, as we know, we just like suck it up.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Talks, you paste a smile on your face, the friendly grin just to kind mm-hmm. of, and they mistake that for interest and mm-hmm. they just keep going and you've checked out long before, but they haven't looked at the expression on your face and you're just checking your internal clock going, how soon can I finish this drink and get out of here? Mm-hmm. I don't know, that date I had different kind of energy. I wasn't going to do it this time. So I just let him have it with both barrels.
And I think it's kind of interesting because I know for sure, like my mom is very conservative. So the way that I was raised was like, oh, you're a woman. You should always be kind and polite and like listen to people right. and blah, right? And I'm just like, I'll be polite and kind to people who are polite and kind to me. But yeah, no, I've done the same thing. Like, you know, I've been like on horrible dates and talking to somebody and they've been totally railroading the whole conversation and I should say something, but I just don't. Cause I guess like, you know, my lifelong training of just being kind and polite, you know, kicks in. I'm at the point now too, like where if I have another situation like that, I think I might just get up and leave. And yeah. it's and partially because of a friend of mine, he's a man. So, but that's what he does when he's on a bad date. He'll just get up and leave. And I'm like, oh, you can do. And like, it never really occurred to me before that was
allowed.
A possibility. Yeah, right. And I'm just like, what do you mean I can just leave? And I'm like, so that's my plan. I'm going to try. But it's like, it's hard to break that habit of, you know, yeah. listening to people and kind of being nice and giving so much. Women are always taught, like at least, the women that I know who grew up like in kind of conservative families like I did, like we're taught to give so much
yes,
and just
yes.
endure so much. And it's like,
right.
No, I don't want
right.
to.
Exactly.
My time is precious. I got stuff to do. So
indeed. I mean, sometimes I also am kind of aware that, you know, we're all living under this patriarchal system that is uh-huh. fucked up for both sides. And, yeah. You know, men get to dates, and the impression at least I got when I was dating men in their 40s in particular, is that they definitely feel the need to impress. Mm. And part of that is performance. And in a lot of male brains, performance means talking and impressing and dumping their knowledge and their resume and, you know, not doing what we find impressive, which is saying, what do you think? It's
right.
really not that, you know, we find it quite simple. But I have, there is a small part of me that has a little bit of sympathy for the guy who keeps talking because I can see that it's almost like he's dancing as hard as he can. You know, when I see that it's somebody who's struggling in a way, even mm-hmm. in his own kind of blowhard way, I am a little bit more gentle. I will say something like, you know, this isn't very gentle, but I'll say, we've been here for 20 minutes. Can you ask me a question about myself?
Oh, that's good, though. I like that.
And that has worked on a few occasions. That really has worked because the guy will it resets something in his brain. Mm-hmm. And he'll when it has worked, it's a beautiful thing to see because he'll sit back and go, oh, okay. You know, and he'll kind of take a breath and take a sip and and then chill out, you know, and that has worked. It's been nice. And then when it doesn't, when they misbehave, it's like, okay, it's a shortcut to the date's almost over now.
Out of here. So did you only use Tinder, or do you make use of other dating sites? Which dating site do you think is the best overall?
I'm now on 4 dating sites currently.
Okay.
Tinder is, Tinder is just, everybody's there. That's the thing with Tinder. It's just volume. On Tinder, I rarely run out. I don't know if you've ever gotten to the point on Tinder where it says there's no one else around you.
Yeah. No, I've been there.
We've all been to that sad place in Tinder and you're like, oh God, all right. Just like turn out the light and go to bed. I don't get there nearly as quickly on Tinder. In fact, so far I haven't gotten there in this last round of dating on Tinder.
Okay.
But I joined Feels just 2 days ago. Field.
Field. Okay.
And I got like 100 swipes in before I got to the lonely place.
Oh. You know,
there's really not so many people there. I'm also on Bumble and on OkCupid. So, the other sites beyond Tinder, they are a little more time consuming because there's more to the profiles and there's more to look at and you get to take more time in your deliberations. But as it turned out, when I compared Tinder and Bumble, the outcomes were the same, fewer matches, same amount of time. You know, Tinder for me is just, it's the public sphere. It's just like anywhere else in the world. It's a shopping mall. Everything bad about the world is also bad about Tinder.
Yeah, right. Because I think Tinder gets a really bad rap. People are always saying, you know, Tinder's just for hookups, or you're always going to be disappointed when you meet, you know, somebody from Tinder specifically. But
I do get that a lot. You know, we get that when we share our dating stories. You know, there's always somebody, usually they're married, a long-term relationship, or, you know, someone who has, you know, pre-internet, when they're like, oh, well, what do you expect? It's Tinder. Or people who've had bad experiences on Tinder, or people who are ashamed about their own, you know, search for love or something. Tinder is a cesspool. It's just like, it's a street corner for the dregs of society. And then they'll like look you right in the eye and let the irony escape them that they're talking about you. They're talking about me. I mean, I'm on Tinder.
Right.
A lot of people I know are on Tinder. People that I've met and fallen in love with, I've met on Tinder. Tinder is reality. I mean, it's the world. Millions of people are there. It's like Starbucks. You all end up in line at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
So why do people think Tinder is like a, you know, hotbed of bad behavior that doesn't compare to anything else in real life? I mean, Tinder is no worse than meeting someone at senior prom. Senior prom is it's a nightmare. A singles bar, a sports match, a shopping center, Thanksgiving dinner. You know, that's no picnic either. Like,
True.
So, you know,
on the road, on the street. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then, okay. So there's also like going out with friends. So we're comparing Tinder to shaving your legs, squeezing into something really uncomfortable, spending an hour in front of the mirror, spending a bunch of money on drinks, just to sit at a table with your girlfriends and yell small talk over blasting music, like waiting for some vapid pack of dudes that have been circling you to get drunk enough to feel like they can come say hello, you know.
Yeah,
I could be sitting on my couch doing in a much more efficient way.
Yeah,
and also, yes, you're right. Meeting someone in public. I met somebody in the supermarket. It was the most cliche little meet cute in the supermarket.
Aww.
And he gives me his card. I'm like, oh my God, you're so cute. And I get home and I've got his card and I'm like, I wish there were a profile. I'm like,
oh yeah,
nothing about this guy.
Yeah.
And I went and I'm like, I called him anyway because it was a meet cute. It was so Hollywood. And we went out and like I get into his car and there's like a what about Benghazi sticker on the bumper, what about the emails or something
on his
sticker on his car.
All right.
I was like, you know what? If he had a profile, I would have swiped on him without even looking.
Right.
So, I mean, there's so much. And then there's the safety issues about being online. It feels like far more safe than just meeting somebody that you went into the supermarket. I don't know anything about that guy with the Benghazi sticker.
Yeah, true. Because at least like if you meet somebody online, like you said, you see the profile, you see the photos, and then you also probably have like a little bit of a conversation first.
Yeah. And then, so there's also the people who are saying, well, you know, just friends go out, meet like friends and family, tell everyone you know that you're single, and friends and family will set you up. So like, seriously, how many times does that happen in life? Pretty much exactly never. I really think that's like, that's rom-com romance bullshit that really just doesn't happen on the daily. I mean, like, there was a guy that I met, we dated for a year. He was great. On our first date, we realized we had literally dozens of friends in common, in real life friends in the same city. Yeah. We were both single, both of us, for more than a year. They both knew that. And they all knew that. All of our circle of friends. One of them thought to introduce us. Huh. We had to have Tinder.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's what Hinge is, right? Hinge is kind of that. It's have you heard of Hinge?
Yes, I've heard of Hinge. Hinge is like, that's my next one on the list to try. I haven't checked out Hinge yet.
I've heard good things about it. I personally haven't tried it either, but like, it's supposed to like compare your Facebook profiles or something and see if you have like, you're supposed to match with people who are friends of friends and stuff. So,
Okay.
Yeah. Good. I think that's the idea. I might be wrong. Yeah.
Well, also things are also different in France. Okay, Cupid is still strangely popular here, whereas in the US, it's not so much.
Yeah. I remember OK Cupid being popular when I was in like university. So 12 years ago, I guess. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Still working here.
Oh. And then is the experiment like ongoing or has it concluded?
Well, you know, what's the conclusion, really? I mean, the conclusion is, what does it take to fall in love? Maybe. Mm. I mean, it ends when I found love. I mean, the statistical part of the that experiment is over, but I am thinking about, now that I'm kind of exploring the data, shall we say. I'm interested in looking at the difference between American dating and what's happening here in France.
Yeah.
I really do feel like, I mean, I knew this before I moved to France, that it's a terribly misogynist country. It's retrograde in a lot of ways. Very, very advanced in a whole set of social issues, for which I admire and love this country, but also around, you know, racism, sexism, homophobia. It's just like, oh my God, I do feel like I'm back in high school and, you know, in the 80s, a lot of ways. It does feel like, you know, Tinder in France feels like the halls of my high school when I'm kind of in a, you know, sophomore year, looking around going, how am I going to find anyone worth loving in this field of testosterone monsters, you know? But then again, Paris is a global city. And there are pockets of communities and of people that are progressive thinking and are creative and countercultural and, I'll find them. I know they're here.
I wish you luck. Yeah, because I think France sounds surprisingly similar to Korea, I guess, in that regard. Because like, and especially now, there's like this whole resurgence of, even among like very young people, like a lot of men, and they're between like 20 and 30 years old, are like going hyper conservative nowadays. So it's like, it's so hard to find a guy who doesn't have, like you were saying, kind of like antiquated ideas about, you know, equality or just anything. It's like, the horror stories. I'm on some Facebook groups. Like, I find like social media is very useful to gather like these kinds of personal stories about dating or just about, you know, culture or life in general. And I'm on a couple of Facebook groups, and just, I want to say every day there's a story of some girl who started dating a guy in Korea, and then now she's been abused or raped or abandoned, and she's like, you know, seeking legal advice. It's kind of a thing. Like, and there's a lot of people who they get married, like they're from, I don't know, some European country or South American country or like Southeast Asian country or even Russia. And they get married to like a Korean guy, and they're like, wow, he was so sweet at the beginning. Like, he was really kind. He doted on me. And then, you know, once we got married, just like a light switch just totally flipped. And I've, and it's not just from foreigners that I've heard that. I've also had that kind of conversation with my, like, I teach adults here. So with my Korean students, like, oh, my husband was really nice when we were dating, but then after we got married, not so much.
Wow. Wow.
It's like, it's crazy. And like, I just don't understand why anybody would ever like fall for, I don't know, that kind of stuff. It's a lot of gaslighting, I think, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, that's a cultural gaslighting too. I mean, it's not just one dude doing it. And also, I mean, for me, I'm experiencing a whole other, this is a generational thing as well. I mean, I'm 58 and these are guys who have, they grew up pre-internet, like I did. Mm-hmm. I'm comparing what I see on these Facebook groups that you're talking about that are mostly populated by millennial women and younger. And I'm learning so much from these groups. I mean, they're sharp and fierce and unrelenting and supportive and educative. And, you know, groups like I Am a Rando on Tinder and Here Are My Demands. Great, great group where women just post, men going out of their way to criticize women who don't know they exist. You know, that kind of thing. And just like guys, just behavior, online behavior in a way that it's like, it's such a marvelous support group, these online Facebook groups and others. And it's also a really great way for guys to like, you know, eavesdrop basically. A lot of these groups, the men let men in and you can see what it's really like for us out there. And I think what, you know, if there's anything I can say to men around this, it's like, just start listening. And God, they're just so good at cock blocking themselves, basically.
It's true. I mean,
it's not, it's really, and our expectations are so low at this point. I mean, there's a part of me that's really very, very depressed that I even have something called a feminist kink profile that I felt the need to like do something that is so like crazy and extreme. It's not crazy and extreme to demand feminism, to expect it. At all. I mean, it's a bottom line. So I just wonder how much of this is like we're entering very scary political times where younger generations are kind of embracing this neoconservatism, this pickup artist culture, which, you know, is relatively recent in dating history. I mean, no, actually it's not, it's ancient, but it's been commodified and packaged in kind of a new, very, very toxic way.
So what's your overall, I guess, impression, major takeaway from the experiment?
My overall major impression takeaway is, I don't know, is there one? I guess from my, you know, my personal life, my personal dating life, I'm not feeling really hopeful about finding someone in France, which is kind of has to do with where I may be going with my next experiment, which is comparing Paris to another major American city and, you know, seeing what the outcome is.
Yeah. I mean, don't do Korea either.
Okay. No. It would definitely be somewhere back in the US, but you know, the whole experiment to get one date, it took 905 swipes. When I met my boyfriend, the one I was dating for a year and a half, it took 50 dates to find him. He was around date 50 or so, a couple of years.
Wow. And then what advice would you give to people who are seeking partners via like dating apps?
Well, there are these Facebook groups that I think are really helpful. I mean, just the community, the support, the knowing that you're not alone, the safety aspect of it is really great. I mean, really there's two camps for advice. You can't give the same advice to men and women or, you know, I you know, but I'm also talking very generically here, men and women. I'm not honoring all of the many different gender expressions and sexualities here. I'm being quite reductive in all of this. But there's one piece of advice that works for both is that you just be really, really faithful to yourself in your profile. Just be very clear about who you are and what you want and hold yourself to that. We invest all of our hopes and dreams in online dating. And then, you know, we really let that cloud our judgment. I think one of the things that women struggle with frequently is kind of feeling like we are the object of the of a fantasy that is becomes more intense in the online environment. Mm-hmm. Particularly for men, I would be like, you know, like chill. Don't let your hopes cloud your judgment. And also understand that we know, you know, just, you know, basically don't be a dick. I mean, it's really, that's what I can say. Simple. It's pretty simple. I mean, it's like, just don't, stop turning the conversation to your penis. Like, it's amazing how quickly that happens. And you see this on the online groups where, you know, you can be talking about spackling a hole in the ground and it'll be, oh yeah, okay, it'll be about the penis suddenly, you know, anything. They'll and I guess that's again, the bar is low when that's the advice to men. You know, don't be a dick.
So low, but yet so insurmountable, kind of like on a, like for some reason it just seems really challenging even though it's very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hopefully it does someday take, we'll get there.
Yes, we'll get there. We'll get there. I do feel hopeful, because also these groups, you know, for example, there's all of this cynicism. There really is there. You know, there's people who have been hurt and burned and they get harassed and abused by strangers. However, there's always this, I want to say a cloud of this hope. There's hope that always is lingering. And when there are stories, you know, I was in one group where members of the group found each other through the group and you know, met in real life and fell in love in real life. And this whole group of like 50,000 embittered women were like, oh, you know, right, everyone we just like came together and it was like, it was huge. So I guess it's, you know, trying not to let it wreck your spirit too. That's a piece of advice that I have to wake up every morning and look in the mirror and tell myself that too.
It can happen. It can happen.
Yeah.
And then I believe, so you're writing a memoir about your dating experiences. Would you like to share some excerpts with our listeners?
Oh, I have an excerpt about my, the kiss first experiment. I guess I could call it an experiment.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is a brand new project. I've been writing these vignettes about my dating life and putting them on Facebook literally for 10 years. And folks have been asking me to put it together into some kind of collection, and I just really wasn't able to find a way into it. But recently, it's just kind of coming out. And so the working title is How to Fuck a Feminist.
And oh, okay.
Yes. And
I like it.
It is, you know, interestingly, I thought it was going to be something of a manual. And as it turns out, it's the word fuck is, you know, flexible, as we know. It's very has multi uses. And so the meaning, How to Fuck a Feminist, is coming out sideways in all kinds of interesting ways. But this was before the pandemic, and I was, I had my new kiss first experiment. My first kiss first date was a tantra practitioner I found on OkCupid. In the course of our online flirting, he introduced me to a new word, époustouflante, breathtaking. Given the stakes of the experiment, I had ratcheted up my pre-screening process. My photo standards were less forgiving. Show me those teeth. And I was drawing out the texting phase to reduce the risk of ending up mouth to mouth with some wacko. Tantra guy seemed a good place to start. On my way to the bridge, I wondered what the hell I'd say to this stranger before he kissed me. Bonsoir is what I said. What he said, approaching me with a confident smile, was époustouflante, waiting to pronounce the word until his lips were a centimeter from mine. But he didn't kiss me. He didn't kiss me. He hovered his lips over my mouth, and he breathed, and I breathed, and our breaths mingled deliciously. Then he brought his lips to my cheek, to my neck, brushing but still not kissing, and I gasped a little, and his hands wrapped around me and settled at the small of my back, and he pulled my hips toward his to let me know he was really quite hard, and yet he still wasn't kissing me. Still, we stood at the railing, overlooking the canal, clenched in the world's most erotic non-kiss for, what, 3 minutes? 5 minutes? His hands inside my coat, my hands on his chest. itching to open the buttons until I couldn't take his tantric tease a moment longer. And crushed with the desire, I lifted my mouth to meet his, and finally we kissed. Tantra Man delivered a terrible, horrible, awful kiss.
Oh, no.
The kiss of a person who really dislikes kissing. Wet and soft and shapeless and timid, without direction, without confidence, dead lips, flaccid tongue.
Ugh.
Mr. Kiss number two was much younger than me. I found him at the top of the bridge, leaning against the railing, waiting for me and smiling. He didn't move. He waited for me to walk into his arms. Salut toi, he said, and reached for my waist with a gesture so casual and sweet, it was as though we were married. I leaned into him and we were kissing. He tasted good and smelled nice, and he knew what a kiss should be. And then he pulled back and laughed, and he said, let's get a drink. We sat alongside the canal for a half an hour and talked, and then I took him home and we fucked like bunnies. But he made love like a young man, in a hurry to please his cock. I don't remember if I slept with Mr. Three, but I do remember his kiss. We met at the base of the bridge under a street lamp. In our text exchanges, he'd said, let's not speak, no words, just lips. Perfect, I texted back. And when I arrived, I smiled, and he held out his arms, and without breaking stride, I walked right into them, pressed my pelvis against his, and he held me by the back of the neck, and there was nothing, 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 but nothing around us as he kept going and going with a tenderness so urgent it felt as though we both understood Paris would crumble to bits at our feet the moment we stopped. I'll never forget sleeping with Mr. Four, because at 1 o'clock in the morning, he took a call from his mother, leaping from my bed to answer his cell. He wandered around my apartment in the nude, reporting on his head cold and the medication he'd picked up at the pharmacy that afternoon. Exasperated, I got out of bed to use the bathroom, and when I came back to the kitchen, he was still chatting nakedly with Mama, his penis hard, and to my horror, he pulled me toward him to rub it against me, his mouth at my neck, his mother's voice in his ear. When he hung up, he was confused at my laughter. I was making no effort to hide my unkind amusement. But he protested, if I don't answer, she'll just keep calling. Five was an insanely handsome financial analyst. I don't remember why we never had a second date. I wish I could. He was tall, well-dressed, intelligent. Throughout our text exchanges, he'd insisted on maintaining the formal address, the vous. It is with great pleasure, madame, that I accept your kind invitation to kiss you on the bridge. He was so beautiful in his pictures that I halfway expected to discover he had a false profile, and I was like stealing myself to back away if necessary. Showing up as advertised, he kissed me expertly, and I went wet like a champ. I stepped away, hot flashing menopausally, and gave the conversation a polite 12 minutes before I took him by the hand and led him directly to my bed. He was naked within 4 minutes of entering my place, addressing my pussy in the familiar. Mr. Six was an artist, a hipster, a storyteller, and probably married. By accident, we ran into one another early before we got to the bridge. Hi, I said. He'd just come off the train from Brussels. He placed his bags on the sidewalk and reached for my face. We were blocking foot traffic. He held me by the cheek and proceeded to deliver the world's most deliberate kiss. It was nuanced and sensitive and responsive and also insistent. It had peaks and valleys, moments of calm and moments of urgency, moments of resolve and moments of distress. I was on the edge of my seat. Fixed there on the sidewalk, we ignored the people elbowing past us as we followed the narrative arc of this kiss. But when it became clear over drinks that it was time to advance the plot to the privacy of my apartment, Mr. Six mumbled an excuse and went away.
Aww.
My kiss first dates ended with Pierre, lucky number 7. Beginning the most sensual and tumultuous romantic relationship of my life, followed by the hardest breakup. This despite an underwhelming first kiss, which was that of a teenager. A boy wrapped up in a fantasy, his brain having sped past foreplay and his tongue following suit, aggressive and insistent. At the foot of the bridge sat the famous Hotel du Nord from the film. Later, Pierre told me he'd had a fiery coquette Arletty in his head. In any case, I startled and withdrew, disappointed. We leaned against the railing, chatting awkwardly for a few minutes until he suggested we go get that drink. But just as we were approaching the staircase to the street, Pierre said, wait. With one of the large, strong hands for which I would come to ache over the following months, he cupped my neck, directed my face toward his, and kissed me straight into a canyon of passion against which I was helpless from that moment forward. To me, romantic tumult has never been attractive and remained unattractive for the duration of our relationship, but none of that mattered because for the next year with Pierre, I lived in a state of terrible, unrelenting desire.
I'm very,
thank you.
The mom one, though.
I know, right?
It's like, oh my God.
Dude.
Like, I mean, you know, talking to your mom is one thing, but talking to your mom when you're hard and then, that's
yeah,
else.
It was
that's
creepy. Yeah.
Oh man.
And then twice, like, actually, mom had a special ringtone. And the phone rang once, and then when, you know, in the middle of the things, and then 5 minutes later rang again. And then I understood why he had stopped, because he knew 5 minutes later his mom was going to call back. And that's when he got out of bed.
Wow.
1 o'clock on a Friday night, date night, mama's calling.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But again, yeah. A red flag of whatever, dodged a bullet there, you know?
There you go.
They revealed themselves.
And that was... And that was very beautiful. And I think it's an excellent experiment. And I might have to try that next time I start like dating. Cause yeah, there's nothing worse than a disappointing kiss.
Yeah. 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 It took a lot of, I don't know. I kind of had to gather up all my courage to do that. It was fun and it was, you know, romantic. But it also was risky, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I was in danger because I really was screening well, but you know, risky, like you just end up with a bad kiss, bad breath,
yeah,
or someone smelled awful, or you know.
Yeah, I went one of the most more recent dates I went on, which was quite a long time ago, was this guy, and like he wasn't super cute, but he was very funny. Like our text exchange was fabulous, and then I met him, and you know, when he took off his mask, so we're still all masked up here, just immediate repulsion, like sorry guy, he's still a nice guy, but just like I don't know, like halitosis or something, like you know, the crevices between his teeth were like black, and I was like, wow, when was the last time you flossed? 20 years ago. Like, oh. And I was like, and I could smell, like you know, when he would talk and exhale, I could smell his breath from across the table, and I'd be like,
yeah,
very fun. Like we hung out for a while, like it was a pretty long date, but just like no second date. I just can't get
so
over
awkward. Yes, but it worked out for me. I was I didn't run into any bad breath guys, and I had a great time.
And ultimately, and I mean, 7 dates, and then on the 7th, you found a boyfriend. I think that's pretty successful.
Yeah, it is. Maybe I'll you know, once it's hard to know when you can start kissing strangers again in these times. So I guess my feminist kink profile is substitute for that. You know. Something a little risky, something a little bit dangerous and out there, slightly dangerous. It's I guess I don't have my tolerance is for danger is pretty low.
Stay safe out there, everybody listening.
Yes, stay safe out there for sure.
Stay safe. So anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. So Shannon, thank you so much for joining us, for joining me. I know it's late there, and I really appreciate you taking the time and hopping on with us. So before you go, is there any organizations or websites or social media pages you'd like to introduce our listeners to?
My website, where you can find out about, you know, my writing, and I'm an independent writing coach and manuscript consultant, shannonesque.com, it's called. And there's information about I'm doing a workshop here in Paris in October, a writing workshop for a whole week, coming to Paris and helping people with their memoirs and novels, writing in Paris.
Oh,
it's called the Real Paris Writing Workshop. And it's meant to kind of discourage that whole Emily in Paris trend that we have going on. We're like going to the real Paris and not the one that is supposedly under the Eiffel Tower, you know. The place where real people live. I'm on some Facebook groups. For example, I'm a rando on Tinder and here are my demands. Mm-hmm. Another one that I like a lot is called Let's Not Date. Mm-hmm. And there's a third, oh yes, men talking to themselves online, which is really wonderful.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check all those out. On Facebook, right?
Those are all on Facebook, yeah.
Oh, awesome. So again, thank you so much for coming on today. And thank you too to our listeners for your continued support. If you like today's episode, please like, comment, subscribe, and share on whatever platform you're listening to this on. It really helps us out. And consider becoming a patron on Patreon. Patrons get access to exclusive content, AMAs, and more. All proceeds will be donated to the Center for Reproductive Rights and Cool Earth. All links in the description. And check out our website and social media pages for updates and blog posts. Also, links in the description. So anyway, so Shannon, thanks again.
Thank you. Great conversation.
Yeah, I know. I said before we started recording that it was going to take like 30 minutes, but it's
oh my God, look at us. We just kept going. <know. laughs>
But it's great. Yeah, it's a really nice conversation. I think, you know, I'm really looking forward to this memoir and like, I really want to give like the whole thing a read because yeah, I think it's pretty representative of, you know, many people's dating experiences, especially with like, you know, today. So,
well, the plot is still unfolding. It doesn't have an end yet.
Oh, that's even better. I like a nice plot. That's kind of, how can I say, like very dynamic like that. That's mm-hmm. great. So anyway, thanks again. And
thank you.
Thanks and goodbye, everyone.
That's it for today, folks.
Thanks so much for tuning in.
And as always, please support this work by subscribing and donating to our cause at www.teamgetoverit.com.
Donors get access to specific content like stickers, t-shirts, and postcards from our journey.
You can donate for as little as $5 and the benefits build from there.
Go to our website for more info.
Or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Team Get Over It.
Thanks for listening.
And catch us next time on Get Over It.